And welcome to the Gaslit Podcast, and thank you guys for listening. This is the bank holiday, Good Friday, Easter weekend bonus edition, and this is for all the DIYers out there. We've had the Christmas, we've had the chilly spell, it's starting to warm up a little bit. We've got a four-day weekend for most people, and all the staff here at Gaslit too. And that is classic DIY season. You'll have queues around the block for your B&Qs and your Screwfix and those type of establishments, and I really want to give you some hints and tips before you get started on your DIY projects, and hopefully I can save some disasters and save you a few quid as well. But first of all, here's my friend Sean to tell you a little bit about the podcast. Thank you for listening to another Gaslit Podcast, the show to help DIYers, new people into the industry, and those who are wanting to expand their knowledge. Each week we'll pick a topic and go into details, and with special guests and listeners' questions answered, we will look forward to some of the conversations. So let's get back to the show. Right, thank you very much indeed, guys. I hope you're all keeping well. So I've made some notes here. This is just an audio-only podcast that we're just getting out on this Good Friday morning. A couple of tips, really. So stuff we get called back to. So that's what sort of we have the bank holiday, comes the Tuesday, the phone starts ringing. We've had a go at this, we've had a go at that. That don't stop leaking, that's everywhere, etc., etc. So I'm going to try and give you some hints and tips here, guys. And as DIYers, you're going to do it anyway. So I'm just going to try and help you out here and try and save you a little bit of pain. So a classic call out that we do get is radiators. So you want to decorate behind the rad, you know, your partner indoors is, oh, you know, let's get take the radiator off and we can do it properly, which is great. And I'll fully support that. So when we've got radiators, and it's not a really difficult thing to take a radiator off a wall if you're confident and a little bit competent in the DIY skills sector. So what we just need to make sure is that the radiator's turned off on the valves. So we're going to talk about a typical sort of radiator, you know, the white ones that come across your wall with the little grooves on the side. So you just need to think about on the radiator pipes that come into the rad with the valves is that we're going to need to sort of have a bit of a flex on those. So we have come across them before in the past when they're so tight, it's really, really difficult to get them off. But if you've got plenty of play in the pipe, now copper does have a certain amount of flex to it if it's on copper towels, which they typically are in domestic houses. So if there's any clips, I'd say sort of release the clips, sort of see if we can pop the copper pipe out of there if you're going to do it anyway. So we just need to make sure the valves are turned off. If we then open up the bleed valve, and we should get a trickle of water because there'll be a little bit of pressure inside the radiator. And the trick is we open the bleed up. If the water don't stop running, then the valves aren't turned off. Bit of common sense there, guys. But unfortunately, common sense, as a friend once told me, ain't that common. So make sure you open the bleed valve up, little trickle of water, and it stops. So we're fairly confident that at that point that the water's turned off to the radiator. So when we can then start thinking, right, okay, we're going to undo the nuts on the radiator side of the valve, and we're going to do that. So make sure if you've got like a TRV that we don't sort of knock it and turn the thing on. And always have a disaster plan, because the water coming out of the radiator will normally be as black as you're at. So just think about floor coverings. If you're going to start staining anything, you get it on your hands, you ain't going to get it off. But if you do get the black stuff onto any carpets, just make sure that you chuck a bit of fresh water on. This is what we do. Chuck a bit of fresh water on out of a cup, straight from the tap, while it's still wet, and then get a wet vac and then hoover it up and give it a little bit of a rubbing. And that dilutes down the black iron oxide that's then on the carpet or on your floor covering, and that gets the stain out. An absolute treat, but don't leave it any drops on there. If you leave them and they dry, that is it forever, as far as I'm concerned. They will not come back out. So a couple of things that I will have to hand if I was doing this job, certainly at home, I'd have some half-inch caps. So when you take a radiator off on the valves, they may drip a little bit. So TRVs, when they get cold, they go into frost protection, they'll actually open. So TRVs, when you turn them off, they don't actually turn off. And if anyone does knock them, they'll fully open as well. So get some half-inch caps with some little washers inside, the little black washers, and you can get them from any of your DIY shops and obviously your local plumbers merchants. Maybe go and see Darren down there at City Plumbing in Rochester that sponsored a podcast for us and gave us a lovely voucher to give away to one of you listener guys. So pop down and get some bits. But if you get some caps, so you got two types of caps. You got the female cap and you got a male cap. So if you get one of each, so a male female times two, excuse me. So when you then do take off the radiator valve, you can screw the cap on that side, on both sides of those. So when you lift the radiator off, then you know that the valves aren't going to let by and start leaking. Also, I'll have some towels, I'll have a bucket, because when you do actually take the radiator off, the radiator is still full of water. So just be mindful of that. And then that's why I'll have the male cap as well. And then that should then just slide onto the radiator towel and just nip that up as well. So when you're taking them off, make sure you close the bleed valve back up so we create a bit of a vacuum. Crack the nut off to one of the radiator towels. And I always say go for the easiest one first. Nip the nut off. But when you're undoing the nut, support the valve at the same time. Because if you stress that valve, it stresses the olive on the other side. And if it does that, that can then start to leak and weep. So the whole thing, you've got to make sure you hold it true and nice and square. And then when you do crack the nut off, if you've got another set of grips, just hold the valve nice and tight and then crack it. And you will get some water come out from the radiator side. And then just manage that best you can. They do little flexi tubs, little triangle tubs with little cutouts that go around pipes, but they do weep past those little cutouts that go around the tubes. So get a little towel under there just to catch it. So just be mindful of that, you won't get every single drip and what's the water that potentially is going to be black is going to be, where is it going to be going and how are you going to manage that? So we managed to undo the radiator towel and we've got a little bit of water come out and it's holding a bit of a vacuum. And we think, great, that's great. So that's ideal one side. Well, then we go the other one, we do exactly the same again. So really, ideally, you'd need two people on this. We can do it on our own, but if you're not really used to it, have two people there. And then what you want to do is get your cap. So when you then, if you can push the valve out of the way, get your cap back on, your half-inch male, and then wind that onto the nut and olive that was on the radiator. And just do this up just over finger tight. You haven't got a swing on it. It's not really holding any pressure, really. And just get that on just to stop the drips. And all radiators, like the traditional radiators, they'll hang onto the wall and brackets. So you just lift them off directly upwards and they'll come off the brackets. Now, the actual bracket themselves is probably only got a little lip of around sort of 10, 12 mil. So you ain't got to lift it high. But obviously with the weight of the radiator and the weight of the water as well that you're lifting off, obviously there's going to be quite a lot of weight to it. So just be mindful of that when you do lift it up. And a lot of people, I've seen it so many times, they lift the radiator off and they're kneeling down and they're in a bit of a crouch position and now they've got to try and, with the weight of the radiator, stand there, unfold their legs and stand up at the same time, which is quite amusing to see. They look like a newborn baby deer trying to stand up for the first time, which is quite funny to watch. Obviously, you don't say that at the time to them, but so you get that. And then turn the radiator upside down. And then that just stops any, that's why you make sure you shut the bleed valve. And then you just turn it upside down and whip it out into something like the garden and then empty the water out. So, that's how we'd then take that off. And then basically exactly the same in reverse, making sure the radiator's empty and we've got no water left in it. It's just a bit easier to line up. It's a lot lighter and to get that back in as well. So yeah, just a couple of tips there on taking a radiator off. Obviously, we use a bit of plumbing paste. You can get that from all your merchants and from your DIY stores as well. It's a liquid paste and it stays soft as well. And just put that round the olive. Try and avoid using PTFE tape. That white thin tape, plumber's tape. You don't need it really, be honest. Just a little bit of plumber's tape, plumber's paste around the olive, and that'll pull up nicely. And never over tighten the olives. So I'd say probably hand tight, certainly if it's been made before, do it up by hand and maybe quarter of a turn, and that should be enough because the olive is already pre-crushed. And obviously, if you're not really that confident about it, then I'd say just leave it and then give your local plumbing and heating company a call and see if they can come out and get it off for you. So I've got a few little notes here. So slow running sinks, bit of a classic. I've got one at home at the moment, actually, upstairs. That I need to get onto at some point. Typically, there'll be something in the bottom of the U-trap. So what I like to always do is undo it from... So my example is from an ensuite basin. So I'd undo the top nut that connects to the waste of the basin. Then I'll undo it from the plastic pipe. Now, underneath, there will be that U-trap part as well that comes down. I'm not a big fan of just dropping those straight off because that'll be full of the blockage and of water as well. And if it's round the back of a pedestal, it gets a bit awkward. If you've got a little vanity basin, you could just crack that off into a bowl, like a washing-up bowl or a mixing bowl. Obviously, give it a good clean before you use it again. And you can just drop that bottom section off. But in my situation, I've got a pedestal, so it's all a bit awkward and all a little bit backwards. And you can't really see it that well, so I'll drop that off and then take it out. And then you can take the thing fully apart, clean it out nicely. But one of the big things is that you really need to make sure when we put all the rubbers back on, when the rubber goes back, it should stay on to the waste pipe. It's a tapered rubber, and the taper comes from the pipe and goes into the fitting, not the other way around. The taper doesn't go into the nut, it goes into the trap. So make sure it's the correct way around. And then on the basin, it'll have a really thin little tiny O-ring. Just very gently run this under a bit of water, not the trap, not the sink you've just taken off, obviously, because the water will come pouring out over the floor. And just make sure that's nice and clean and it's got no debris on it. And then place it back on that little lip that's on the inside there, and it's in the groove nicely. And that's probably the biggest thing about traps is getting all the rubber seats back in properly and where they need to be before you start offering them back up. And those nuts you can see on traps have got little grooves on to be used by hand. Now, we love a bit of McAlpine as a brand here for wastes. But if you start using the cheaper wastes, like your Flowplast and stuff like that, the plastic itself is quite soft and you can over-tighten the nuts and it starts jumping because the thread's broken. So I'd strongly recommend if you're going to replace one, use a McAlpine. They've got a better quality plastic. It's a better quality material. And I like to think that, certainly here at Gaslick, we get paid to do it once. We don't get paid to go back to do it a second time. So we'll always fit a bit of quality, which is great for the customer and great for us as a business as well. So don't over tighten them, and obviously do test it. And always test, if you do take a waste apart, test it on the hottest water you can. If it's going to leak, it'll leak on the hot because that's when everything, all the materials starting to expand. So that's running through radiators, that's running through slow running wastes and traps and stuff like that. So one of the other classic things we get is we've drilled a hole and now we've got a water leak. So just be mindful where we're drilling near plug sockets. Wires traditionally should run up and down and left and right from a socket. So don't ever put that pitcher up just above that light switch or that plug socket. There's really a high chance that you're going to find a electrical cable there. Now, there are items on the market you can purchase to detect wires that are in walls and stuff like that, and water. I think Bosch, we've got a Bosch one here, I think, and that can then go over and give you a bit of a detection. So if you're going to drill any holes and you're a little bit unsure, then maybe get a detector or ask a friend or a neighbour if they've got a detector to see if they can find any pipes and cables in the wall before you drill the hole. But what I would say is that always have the disaster plan in the back of your mind. Where's my stopcock? How do I turn the water off? Are we on a sealed heating system? Are we on a gravity heating system? Where's our fuse box? You know, those sort of little bits. We call it a bit of common sense, really. But, you know, for DIYers out there, it may not be that sort of... That thought process may not be in there. So just be mindful of that. If you was to hit a pipe and you was to create a leak, how are you going to turn the water off and how are you going to manage that from there as well? Floorboards, the squeaky floorboard at the top of the stairs. Now, how many times have we been called out to a screw in a pipe? Now, if you've got an older house where it's got floorboards, you know, these are about 150 mil across and they're a bit rocky. You've had central heating fitted at some point years and years ago and the floorboards have been cut and there's a bit of a squeak and a rattle to them. Now, when we was fitting copper pipes before we sort of plastic become a lot more readily available, you'd have to notch the top of the floor joists to be able to get a copper pipe in, because obviously they're not flexible, they come in length, so you can run them nice and straight along with the joists, but when you're coming across, you had to cut the tops to get the timbers through, and and you couldn't actually cut too much of the joist out to get them really low down, because if you did that, you'd absolutely weaken all the timbers in the floor and the structure of the first floor. So typically what they'll do is they'll cut the services in, electrical and water, in the center of the floorboard. And if you have a look and you take a floorboard up, you'll see, so you can then put a fix in either side of the timber of the board into the wood without hitting the without hitting any of the services, we'll call them. So from that side of it, don't just start putting screws smack bang in the middle of floorboards, because they're potentially going to be something in the centre of that. Just if you can, take the carpet out with your floor covering and then remove the squeaky floorboard and then have a look. Take a picture on your mobile phone. Get a tape measure, take some notes down there, and just plan out where you're going to put your new fixings. It may be that they put them down and there's no fixings in it, and it's nice and safe to put fixings in the side. And the reason why also we put fixings in the side of floorboards, because timber will bow, and typically it will bow up, it will start smiling at you. So you put them down left and right just to pull and squeeze that floorboard down, just to try and make it nice and flat as well. So there was covering a couple of bits there for you. And another thing we get, which is the last little tip here on DIY, is outdoor tap kits. So these are the ones you get from your B&Qs and such like. And it's this plasticky, like a garden hose that goes onto this self-tapping metal awful valve thing that sort of screws and pierces the copper pipe. And guys, can I really give you a bit of advice? These are nothing but a waste of money. We go out to so many of these things that are leaking and replace them. You don't get grey water flow. People want to buy them for little outside hot tubs, which are amazing, and they don't get the flow on them. They're absolutely rubbish. Basically, it's just like a piece of garden hose with this little clamp thing. So if you're going to do it, I'd say do it out of compression if you don't have the soldering stuff to do it. As we would do it here at Gaslek. So just make sure your water's turned off and drained down to that point. So when you cut your pipe, you're confident it's not going to work, it's not going to start leaking. And what's super important is that after drilling all your holes and your bits and pieces, just from a water point of view, that you have an inside isolation valve, either that being a screwdriver type or like a lever type. I'd always recommend the lever type. That you can just operate by hand. The screwdriver types, they can fail with time, but one of the big thing is, if you've got a leak and a problem, now you're looking around for a butter knife, now you're looking around for a screwdriver to turn it off in a bit of an emergency. But a lever valve with the hand is nice and easy to operate, and they're a lot more reliable as well. I know they're a bit more expensive. And also make sure your outside tap has got what's called a double check on it. Now, a double check valve basically is a double non-return valve. So when the water is leaving your home, leaving your house, house and going outside, it's then potentially going into a hose pipe, for an example. And what we don't want to do is, I know we did it as kids drinking hose pipe water, but we can't be drinking hose pipe water. You know, all the bacteria, it's not suitable for drinking. And that water then just sits in that corner of that hose pipe. And in really rare, but it can occur in situations, the hose water could drain back into the house and you could end up drinking it. So from the water regulations point of view, a double check valve or a double non-return valve you're going to need on your outside tap. So they're only a couple of quid more than a standard cheap outside tap, so they're not that super expensive. But just to make sure you get that outside bit there as well. So the last little tip I'm going to give for you, so it's going to be really, really obvious, is that Easter Sunday, most shops are closed like Christmas Day. So just be mindful if you're going to need it. Certainly if you're going to any of the big sheds and you think, oh, I only need two, get three and take one back on the Monday and get your refund on it. It's better to be staring at it than looking for it, in the famous words of Guy Martin. He was talking about ambulances and crashing motorbikes and stuff. So, but just from this point of view, just make sure you've got everything around you. You've planned out what you're going to be doing. You've got your disaster plans. Just remember also, here at Gaslit, we don't work on the bank holiday weekends. We only do sort of plan stuff on the out of hours and stuff like that. But people will be doing call out fees for the other tradies out there, your electricians and your plumbers and stuff like that, which are fantastic and great. But just be mindful, you are dealing with bank holidays. And if you do call someone out on an Easter Sunday, potentially that's going to be like a Christmas Day call out sort of fee. Whatever they do charge, I don't know, but just bear that in mind. So that wraps up the little bonus edition here for your Easter bank holiday weekend. So whatever you do, guys, have a lovely one. Enjoy it with your family. Fingers crossed. Obviously, I'm pre-recording this here, but fingers crossed the weather is going to be nice and mild and we all get out and we all enjoy it and we spend that lovely bit of time with our friends and our families. So thank you very much. Take care, guys. Goodbye.